Session number 10081, Reel 2.
You're now going to tell me about your journey to France, aren't you, Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Where did you leave from?
Salisbury Plain, by train to Folkestone. Spent a night at Folkestone. We went straight onto the boat at Folkestone to Boulogne. Escorted by two destroyers each side. There was no trouble there. It wasn't too bad for October. Then we had that dreadful hill at Boulogne. Everybody knows. I don't know whether you know Boulogne, do you? St. Martin's Hill. It goes up from the front. And we had to march up there to the camp at the top. Everybody went up to this camp, which was just a relay place. You stayed there about a night or two nights, I think, and then they were on the march. And we marched down to just outside Abbeville, from Boulogne to Abbeville. And we stayed there some time, then we were inspected by the some major general, because we were now being formed into a fighting corps or army. I don't know what army we were in, but it was army or corps. You see, they were trying to put us into Islam. Well, rather funny joke about that, you know. The chaps had never been to France before, you know, and you know this French wine, Dubonnet. This chap said to me, he said, Tom, this is a damn long village, isn't it? It's called, it's been Dubonnet for it. I said, that's silly. I said, that's a poster advertising for each French village, you know. They always have a Dubonnet. It made me laugh, that, you know. Oh, we had some funny jokes. And anyhow, we got to Abbeville, and we're all new to it, you know. In fact, I don't think we ever... There were no sentries posted or anything like that, you see. And the chap next to me said, come on, he said, let's scamper up to Abbeville. So he went up to Abbeville. And of course, the ever favourite dish of the troops in France was des oeufs, pommes de terre frites, eggs and chips. Most of the men, they look forward to that in the French villages. Well, it's a nice meal, really. Anyhow, we got to Abbeville. We weren't there very long. And, of course, we're getting now towards winter. You see, we're getting to November.
It's 1915,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, and you know what the French national roads are like, paves. And you march on those with heavy army boots. It was a beggar. Anyhow, obviously, they decided for us to have some instruction. This is the next phase. Instruction in the front line. We went to a place called Hebbeton, it's on the map, to have trench instruction with the Oxford and Bucks Regiment. What a lovely regiment they were, territorials. And we went into trench warfare with them, and we thought, this is a bit of a lark. Not a shot fired. So this is warfare, it's all right. And the trenches were immaculate. They never seemed... Of course, this is before the heavy fighting, you see, but the trenches were beautiful, all riveted and everything like that, spick and span. So we had very good training at Hebbeton by the Oxford and Bucks Regiment.
How about your living conditions when you were in that situation?
You slept in barns, you see. Every battalion had a billeting officer, and as the next move was put down to say, well, the battalion will go to a certain village, you always sent your billeting officer ahead to arrange billets. So that we came out of the line on Christmas Eve 1915. We'd had our trench instruction, and we came out. And it was the first casualty we had. I can remember the chaps. It's funny how these names on your memory. His name was Jack Mullock. And the silly boy, because he was only in the teens, he put his head over the trench. And somebody, a shell came and knocked his head off. And that was the first casualty we had. It was his own fault. See, we were not used to trench warfare. Afterwards, we kept our heads down. Anyhow, we came out on was Christmas.
That, could I ask you, was that shocking to you, witnessing your first casualty? I'm wondering, you know, how you would have reacted.
Yes, well, you see, at 18, you don't realise the... an older man might that with say family responsibilities. Well, when you're a youngster, 18, it's like they are today. You see, you don't. It comes in the grapevine. We know this had happened. His poor old Jackie's gone.
Oh, you didn't see it happen.
Oh,
you
no, heard, no, no, no.
Yeah, I see. Yes,
it was in the front line.
Yes,
and that was our first casualty. We came out of the line, and then what was the next move now? Oh, down to Grace or Somme.
This was 1915 still,
early,
was it?
Early 15, yes, night at Grace or Somme.
Early 16.
Yeah. Well, we've got to Christmas Eve, 1915.
I see.
Now, we're moving now into 1916.
Mm-hmm.
And we were still in France, doing odd training and that. We had the trench instruction. We've been taught all the time, we're out of the line, you know, what to expect. Signals, we knew, we saw the system, the wiring system in the trenches, and how your frontline telephone, so the instrument was called a DOM-3 or D-3. That was the Army telephone, D-3. And when you're in the front line, you spoke to battalion headquarters first, then you spoke to brigade, then brigade would go on to division and so on. That was the link up. And what was it now? This we'd march down to the Somme, brace the Somme, you see, in easy stages. And it was the middle of winter. And the corps commander, I don't know his name, he was getting on. He said, now, the battalion will pass a certain... See, you did everything by mat references. B3, A5. The head of the battalion will be at the crossroads at A, B, so-and-so, where the corps commander will be there with his staff to see you go by, you see. He wanted to see. Anyhow, the point was, the night before, it was a terrible frost. The result was, we couldn't get our boots on in the morning. They'd gone frozen stiff, you see. And the colonel, he called all the company sergeant majors. He said, what the hell are you planning? He said, if it happens again, I'll send a whole lot of you back to England. Afterward, you'd have been glad to get back there. He said, why didn't the men put straw in their boots? And of course, the leather wasn't what they had now. It was very hard leather. Oh, I've got to tell you an episode about that. About, if I go back, you don't mind, do you? It's Salisbury Plain. And the colonel had an idea that when you got these army boots, they're very crudely made, that you had to have bare feet, put your boots on, and walk quickly for 2 miles across Salisbury Plain, so your feet got hot and gradually moulded your feet to the boot. And when you came back to camp, you stood in water with your boot still on for half an hour or so, and by that time they said your feet were more or less fitted like a glove into the boots. I don't know where you got the idea from, but it made them very pliable afterwards, you see. But when you got to France and the frost got on the leather, it was very raw leather in those days. There were some people making piles of money in Yorkshire. And We couldn't put the boots on. The colonel prancing up and down the village on horseback trying to get... We got out eventually. A few minutes later, I think the corps commander wasn't very pleased.
Did that system work, though? You know, the business of wearing the boots with bare feet and then putting them in water.
Well,
do you think it made it easier?
No, I think it was the colonel's idea.
Yeah, but did it work? Was it effective?
Oh, yes, it made it that your feet were actually like a glove. A glove in the boots. Very heavy boots, you see. Yeah, I don't know whether he got it from the South African war or not. He could have done that. But that was old Trotter's idea. But we got in here. Anyhow, we walked back to the Somme and then we spent nearly all that early 16 in and out of the trenches at Maricourt was the name of the place. We were almost the extreme right of the British line. Brace-the-Somme, a nice little town. And we stayed there till, well, I thought it must have dawned on the powers that be that they were working up towards the Somme for July the 1st.
Were you developing your signal system?
Oh, yes,
there?
Yes, signals, yes. Yes,
yes. Could you tell me something about the wire? Did you have any particular problems with wire?
Well, you see, the wire very often, it was, you always, in a signal section, you had so many men who were called linesmen. Their job was to keep the line, it was just ordinary cable, intact. And if the shelling came along, naturally it would sever the line. And these men had to go out and tie the line together again. Then, like myself, I never did that work because I was considered an efficient operator. I was doing all the operating with Mawson's inside. And it was all right in the open, but when you get in the front line where these telephone lines were on the side of the trench, full of mud and filth, and they had to try and follow this line through, scrape it, tie them together, insulation tape, to get the contact between the forward battalion and brigade, you see. That was the idea. But it was a messy job. You had to, of course, beforehand, you knew where the line, the incoming, as you went in to take over the line, the outgoing signals would give you a diagram of where the lines were, you see. So you had a rough idea. But then, of course, there's such a passage going up these communication trenches that anything could happen, you see, because everything was carried by hand. They could knock a line off in no time. But anyhow, we had nearly all that early part of 16 was really getting us fit again and keeping learning, you know, episodes of trench warfare. Then they were getting us ready for the 1st of July. That was the Somme. Mm-hmm. And I had the biggest stroke of luck I've ever had. As you know, before a battle, you take over 2 or 3 fields from the French farmer, and you have white tapes, knowing exactly what you're going to do when the attack comes. And if they have a good intelligent officer, he might tell you where the strong points are in the enemy lines. But we were practicing this for weeks before the Somme, this French farm, so everybody knew exactly his position and where he had to go. And then about a fortnight before the Somme, Sir Douglas Haig said, we'll inspect the whole division. We had to march kilometres to this big field, and we had to march back again. Haig came along with beautiful polished horses and the pendants and the armour, polished boots. All he did was just rode along the front line on horseback and go off. And we had to march all the way back. Second World War wouldn't have that. No, no. See, that was the kind of thing. Haig wanted to see the men he was putting into battle. Yeah, I suppose it was a gesture on his part. He wanted to see the men of the division.
Did you see him yourself? Did you get a good view?
I saw him in the distance. Yes, he had two. There were cavalry men, you know, with pennants with his flag on the top. I think army colours were black and red, I think. Black and red, yes. Corps was black and white. red and white, and of course they were polished up to the nine, beautiful horses. We were rather envious. Anyhow, that
was it at all meaningful for you? Was it at all meaningful?
Well, a pride, a pride of being in the British Army and being able to, you were part of a terrific body of men, and that you were, you know. But they did pay particular attention to feet. We had feet inspection almost every day in the trenches. I had feet inspection every day. And that was the only disability I had. I had a touch of trench feet. I don't know whether you know what trench feet is like, but it's awful. It's the skin under the sole of the foot goes green. There's no life in it. It's because we were in water. We couldn't take our boots off at this particular part for a week. Well, you have your being in water and boots for a week. You see, your feet square and all that. When I came out at the end of the war, they cured it for me, but it wasn't painful, but it was just this solid green mass, you know. Mind you, I think probably if there'd been any cuts or anything like that, it might have been serious, you know, gangrene or something like that. We see. Then afterwards, the authorities said we can't have this, men going down with trench feet. So they sent to England for all tins of grease. Big tins of grease came up, and we had to put these on our feet and put your socks on again. But it kept the water out.
Could I just ask, you know, going back to this preparation for the Somme battle, were in this situation at Maricourt, weren't you?
Yes.
What were the preparations? Were you getting tremendous reinforcements of troops coming through?
No. Well,
could you tell me what
well, first
was
of all, the plan of battle was arranged. Who was going to lead the attack? Who was going to be in support? Where were the reinforcements?
You were told of that, were you? You knew of this?
No, but you knew that had to happen, you see,
yes.
Because...
what you yourself saw while you were there. You know, your own view,
We were attacking battalion. We were the 2nd City Battalion, and we were going over first. See, so everybody knew the position in battle.
What were you told about the Germans you were going over?
We were scared stiff of them. I didn't want to meet a German.
Were you told, you know, how their strength and what to expect?
We were told that they were a formidable foe, and that they were a bit cruel in parts, you know. But then we had so much to do, so much to think about. You see that the days went by, you know, that as soon as anything, because the 1st of July was on us, you see. And then I had my stroke of luck. The battalions that were in the front line before the 1st of July, you see, they would come out because the fresh divisions like ours, Kitchener's Army, we were going to be the attacking force. Very often the troops in there were the old regulars. So they stayed there till the first, or just before, till we took over. See, then they came back. Then the new armies marched up day by day. Camps were formed, and the whole place was teeming with troops, right to the front line. The guns fired for a fortnight without stopping. They were wheel to wheel. So many guns were there, you see.
What was that like, you know?
Oh yes, it's frightful it did. But we got you get used to it, you see, really.
Was the idea anything to do with the wire as well?
Well, they wanted the idea of the artillery was to cut the German wire, and it didn't happen. It didn't happen. The men got over there, and then they had to cut their way through. Cut here and there, but it didn't do the trick. And because the German wiring was extremely good. Better than ours. And
why? Could you tell me the difference between the German and the?
Well, it all depended on which part of the line you were in. Where we were going to attack, I should think it'd be about, perhaps. Of quite a distance. I'd say two or three minutes walk to the front line before you got so. But other parts of the line, you might be very close on them, because they used to put saps out, like a listening post on that. But we weren't too bad on the Somme, and we were my battalion, the 2nd City Battalion, were going to be the first to go over. We all knew our places, and it was going to happen on 7:30 on July the 1st. And you know the weather now, just like this, beautiful weather, 7:30 in the morning. The guns were firing like billio. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, about 2 days before, Stacey, a great friend of mine, he's a signals officer, he said, Brown, division has just gone through. He said they want an expert operator to go in the French lines. I said, will you go and take a man with you? That was the best luck I ever had. If I'd have gone over with my front line, with my original formation, we lost 500 men that day. We lost 17 officers out of 20, because the East Surreys on the right were held up with machine gun. And we were the only division that achieved our objectives. The 30th Division was one of the few divisions that achieved our objectives on July the 1st. We got there all right, but at a price. And I lost more and more of my friends there, you see. Now, I got back to division, which was a little village called Ettingham, just outside Bray-sur-Somme. And the signals master, his name was Marston, he was a wonderful chap, but they call him the signals master, he was in charge of all signals there. And on the evening of the 30th of June, July 1st was next morning, I went down with, must have been malaria. My legs went. I couldn't move. And Thompson, who was a regular, said, Brown, can you find or crawl your way back to division? I said, well, I'll try. I said, we can't do anything for you here. But to tell you, first of all, we were in the French lines. Now, on a hill. It was called Square Wood. And we had 8 men, a sergeant and NCOs, working this, used to be a forward brigade station. We had every conceivable signals you could think about. We even had a heliograph, because this regular battalion had just come from India, and they use heliograph a lot in India, you see. And with the sun shining, we tried to get heliograph back to the advancing troops who were down on the right flank of the British line. We had this map business for the plane, which you had a shutter, you put it on the ground for plane, which had a code name there. We had the telephones, so we were pretty well equipped. Anyhow, I had to go, I couldn't move. And I remember, I fell down on the way back to Ettingham, I fell down in the ditch. I was exhausted, I just couldn't move. And I could hear the artillery limbers going up with the shells all night long. I managed to get to my feet. I got to Ettingham, and the signals master said, I said, God, he said, Brown, what's wrong with you? So I told him, he said, well, go on. He put me into a shed. He called an orderly. He said, bring me 4 blankets. And he said, get the rum jar and give him half a cup full of rum. I drank this rum and I fell asleep for 2 days, and the fever had gone. It had gone, entirely gone.
And so these 2 days would have been the first 2 days of the Somme battle?
Yes. Wasn't that lucky? Anyhow, and then afterward I had a good learn. I said, what a wonderful life these chaps have on divisional headquarters. Polished boots and everything like that. Of course, we were full of mud. Anyhow, I rejoined the battalion about the 8th. We'd finished our work on Square Wood. But it was very funny, because Square Wood, down below was a battery of 75 French. You know, the quick firing French, 75 French. They used to go mad on that night. And the French had a lot of coloured troops, you know, didn't they? Well, we came to arrangement. If we gave them our rum ration, they gave us some of their wine, you see, so we had a good business going there. Anyhow, I got scared at night coming through sometimes through these black faces going up there. It was up a hill. It'll be on the map somewhere, Squarewood.
Yes, could you tell me about your relations with the French?
Very good. Oh, yes, very good.
And you cooperated did you?
Mind you, they were artillerymen, but the infantrymen, their trenches were filled very dirty. But not as bad as the Italians. No, but the French. Well, of course, they were only getting a halfpenny a day, a sou a day, you know, those chaps. And it was very funny, you know, about the French, you know. Yes, my relations with the French. A word would go round, French, but you know, in the front, there was a French battalion who we were relieving. You know, spruce up, march to attention, eyes right, and all this kind of business. And the frog, we call them froggies, you know, come along. And they didn't even look at us, just slouch back, not in step. You know, they used to have these overcoats that used to tie up at the side. They looked the filthiest lot I've ever seen in my life. They just slouched back, and there we were, eyes right, you know, general salute and all this kind of business, and the British Army, we were taking over their line. But they were not. And the funny part, then, this is a very funny part. The first time I ever took over a French signal station, the telephone lines, the British would label them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or A, B, C, D. But the French would call them girls' names. Yvonne, Louise, all girls' names on these telephone lines. And we had a hell of a job trying to find where they went to. Oh, what a funny lot, the French, you know. But
this Squarewood.
Squarewood in the French lines, yes.
This was really the sort of signals headquarter, wasn't it?
Well, no, we were forward, what they call forward brigade. We were to transmit signals from the right of the attacking British line, which were down there in the valley. They would transmit to us here, and we would transmit back to Ettingham to division headquarters. It was a forward divisional or forward brigade signal station. We're really a transmitting station. We've got signals. Yes. It's somebody's idea.
Yes. You had some experience there, you know, during this period, did you?
Oh, before the battle, we were practicing signals coming through.
Yes. How about, you know, the experience after the battle? Would you have had any there?
No, well,
you returned your...
I rejoined the battalion on the 8th day of the Somme. Mm.
So would you have been in this particular wood, this...
Well, I didn't go back to the woods.
You didn't?
They kept me back at division to help them with the signals.
Yes, and I wonder, you know, if you had any experience of the signals coming through?
Yes.
At the opening days of the Somme, what sort of messages
you see, I didn't have that because I was on this forward brigade station and I wasn't with the battalion who... You know, but they followed the normal procedure, you see.
Yes. And, I was wondering if you had any personal idea of what was going on at the battle at that stage. You know, did you know, for instance, about the losses in your own battalion?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
You see, when you're on active service and engaged in the battalion, you get very little news of what's going on because you're so concerned with your own safety and what's happening in your immediate vicinity. You hear about these stories later on, you know, but we had no idea that our casualties were as heavy as that. I rejoined on the 8th of July, Troneswood. Oh, gosh, that was a place, Troneswood. It was shelling all the time. And I can see it now. It was a lovely summer's evening. Manchester's had gone in front of us, and the two chaps had been killed. They were just lying there, and there's a little bird chirping there on the hedge. I've never forgotten that, and that there was all this noise going on, and we had to leave the bodies there because we were marching up in Trones Wood, but you never knew where the shells were coming from, you know, and your ears were so intense, you have to watch everything, you know. In fact, after the war, when thunder came, I used to hide under the stairs They couldn't stand the crack of the lightning. You know, thunder and that. They've got as far as the Battle of the Somme, the early days. Well, we followed through. Just ordinary attacking, you know.
This Trones Wood, what, you know, did you actually, was that your objective, to take that?
Yes, yes, Trones Wood.
And
yes.
Was that achieved?
Yes, yes.
Yes, I wonder, you know, what sort of resistance was put up there by the...
Germans? Oh, well, counter-attacking, attack, counter-attack. And then take a few more yards till we gradually push them back, because we gain very little ground on the Somme.
Well, the loss is very heavy in Tronswood, you know.
Yes, yes. It's mostly shell fire. Very little rifle fire. See, we would attack, then he would counter-attack, then we go back again. So it was flow of movement all the time.